we've had nothing on the Marner front for over a week now. And so James Myrtle in The Athletic has been putting together what he thinks the Leafs will look like once the season begins. And in his mind, in his point, he's got as many as 12 new players in the lineup. James Myrtle, editor-in-chief of The Athletic, what do we call you?
That sounds fine, Cord. How are you doing?
Grand Poobah? Is there a hat? Like, is there a fur hat with the horns that you can wear? Or the Grand Poobah at The Athletic.
The good thing about working at a startup is the titles are fluid.
So. Yes, of course.
Well, I think before we start, you're well past startup at this point in terms of The Athletic. And yep. You guys are doing a terrific job. You know, in the position we're in, we want information all around the league and the quality of writers that are writing and the stories that are out there without limits to length or things like that. It's just, it's really, really a welcome addition to sports journalism.
Thank you. Appreciate the plug.
So, James, I think before we get into the depth chart, I think we need to address Marner. Because how he fits is going to be really important into what this team looks like, right?
Well, yeah, 100%. Yeah. I mean,
they've got 3.8 in cap space roughly. Now you can factor in up to 5.3 million in long-term injury relief for Nathan Horton. So that's 9 million.
Yeah, just take it out. Take Horton out of the whole thing.
So just if you ignore
just remove
Horton,
him.
Yeah. So basically, how do the Leafs fit Marner?
Around 10, they can fit him in just fine. I mean, they can carry a shorter roster than the 23-player max, right. And they did that a lot last year, too. So, you know, they can ride at 21 or 22 for most of the year, and that gets them to a point where you can fit $10 million in. Now, if Marner comes in at 10, 7, 5, 11, or higher than that, that's a real problem, and you're going to have to trade somebody else. I mean, there's no other way around it. You're going to have to move somebody else out. And if you look at this roster, there's not a lot of fat to cut off in terms of salary. There's not a lot of overpaid players on that roster. So that's part of the reason for the stalemate with Marner is they really can't afford to go higher than 10, I don't think, on whatever the contract's going to be.
If it was that number, wouldn't it be done now?
I mean, you can get into the conversation over what would a bridge deal look like and what would the number be on a bridge deal and, you know, obviously that's going to be lower. I mean, the rumors are that the Leafs are willing to do 10 on a long-term deal, 7-8 years kind of thing, but they would want the number to be substantially lower if you're looking at a bridge deal. So, you know, those are different scenarios that fit more easily into the Leafs cap situation, and the Marner camp sounds like they want something closer to the Matthews contract.
What's your take on that? I mean, there is obviously wingers are different than centers, but he has led them in points the last 2 years. Patrick Kane is at least as valuable to Chicago as Jonathan Toews is.
And they knew that at the time because they gave them identical contracts.
So what's your take on you know, Marner coming in at 11 plus?
I don't think there's not a comparable around the league at wing with as few goals as Marner has scored in the first 3 years of his career that's making that kind of money. There just isn't. Like, you can't find, especially coming off an entry-level contract. Matthews is more, I would call him a unicorn, in that, like, there's just not centers that produce the kind of goal production that he does. You know, maybe what you point to, like a Stamkos or a Malkin, or there just are very, very few players that do that. Whereas you can find more players that are comparable to what Marner's done on his entry-level deal in terms of not just point production, but goal production, how much of that point production has come from assists. And the other thing I think you got to be cognizant of with Marner is that his point production shot way up when he was with John Tavares. And I think that you can't understate that factor. Whereas a lot of the early part of his career, Matthews has been playing with Connor Brown, Zach Hyman, Kapanen last year at some point.
William Nylander?
A little bit, yeah. Not much last year. So I just think that the big year that Marner had was with John Tavares.
And I'd say the big year John Tavares had was with Mitch Marner. Those are primary assists.
That cuts both ways.
A lot of them are within 3 feet of the net. And, you know, if I'm making an argument for Marner, he's the guy with 94 points last year, and you talk about, you know, the bigger, stronger Matthews, the more durable player has been Mitch Marner.
Yeah, but I don't typically see guys penalized for missing games due to injury on second contracts, especially star players. It just, you don't really, like Eichel didn't get penalized because he missed a lot of games off, you know, in his second season. So, you know, I don't see a comparable for Marner at 11 around the league if you look. You know, I see one in his own locker room. but they're vastly different players, though. I mean, that's what we're talking about. And that's the evaluation that the Leafs front office has made. That they feel that Matthews is worth more than Marner, and that's why we're in the stalemate right now.
Right, and if you're representing Mitch Marner, you have a pretty good argument right now, James.
Except that part of that argument was predicated on getting an offer sheet from another team, and so far that hasn't shown up.
Right. Let's go through this roster. Let's start with the forwards. So you have 13 forwards, now not including Zach Hyman, who will start the year on long-term injury, but of the 13 forwards you have, five of them make less than $1 million a year. So let's start with the first line, Andreas Johnsson, Austin Matthews, William Nylander.
Yeah, it looks pretty good to me. I mean, I like the way that Johnsson played with Matthews last year, and I think getting Nylander, if Nylander's going to make almost $7 million on the cap, he's got to produce. And I think it's going to be hard for him to do that if he's not playing on one of the top two lines. So, it feels like the chemistry that Marner has with Tavares, why would you break that up? So, ergo, Nylander plays with Matthews, and that makes the most sense. And I think a Johnsson, Matthews, Nylander line, or whoever's on that left wing, is going to be very productive.
So now your second line, you've got the great first question mark, Ilya Mikheyev with John Tavares and Mitch Marner, assuming Marner's signed. Mikheyev's a gamble, right? As many players that come from Europe as free agents flush out as make it. But what makes you think that'll work there?
I just know that the Leafs are excited about him, and Babcock sounds excited about him, and I think he's going to get an opportunity. And that window there is open as long as Zach Hyman is out, because he was a hugely effective member of that line when he was healthy. So he's got the knee injury, he's had the knee surgery. No one knows when he's going to be back. Babcock said at the end of the year he thinks he's going to be able to beat the projection and get back early. If he takes the full 6 months, he's going to miss probably the first month of the season, and that opens a door for somebody to step in on that line and get an audition. And I think that it could be Johnsson, it could be Mikheyev, it could be Trevor Moore. But whoever plays on that line is going to be frequently matched against top lines, because that's what they did a lot with Tavares and Marner last year. And it's going to have to be someone who's defensively responsible. And I think it'd be fascinating if they put the KHL import there and just see what he can do.
You know, it's interesting. I got a great scouting report on him. Very, very positive. Every aspect of the game. The person I got it from would be interested to see how the Leafs use him, because he's capable defense. But the one thing that stood out in the entire scouting report was they're going to have to be really patient with him. And that doesn't speak to playing him in the second line to start the year. And, you know, English is a factor with him. And now they really don't have anybody in the locker room to help mentor that aspect of it. And so that was the big fear, was the patience that they would have in the adjustment to the smaller rink, the NHL game, all those different factors. The skill side of it, the scoring side of it, the elite talent side of it, all there, just the question of the patience.
Yeah, that all makes sense to me. I mean, and I've been watching kind of his YouTube highlight videos, and he's a really interesting-looking player, but he's an interesting-looking player in the KHL. You know, I would worry about him. He's very good with the puck. You can tell from watching him, and his skating stride's a little bit odd, and I would be worried about the physicality of the NHL maybe potentially overwhelming him a little bit. The leagues are so different that, you know, we see highly touted KHL players come over all the time and it just doesn't work out. And then every once in a while there's a Panarin who comes in and completely can dominate the NHL. So, you know, and some people have compared Mikheyev to Panarin, you know, as kind of like a lesser version. And he's good with the puck. So it'll be interesting. I think that makes a lot of sense, that you're going to want to shelter him and break him in slowly. And I think that they're going to want to look at him in training camp. They're going to want to look at him in preseason and just see where they think he can fit in.
All right. So the third line, you've got Kerfoot, Kapanen, Trevor Moore. So Kerfoot moves into the Nazem Kadri spot.
Yeah, and I think that's where they intend to play him. I mean, they just gave him a four-year contract for $3.5 million a year. He didn't play a ton of center for Colorado last year. I think he was probably there, you know, 20 or 30 games or something like that. And that's going to be a question mark, is if they feel like he can be a full-time center or not. But the question for me is, if Kerfoot's not your third-line center, then who is? You know, is it Jason Spezza? Is it... There's not really are you going to put Nylander down there? And, you know, we already talked about it. It doesn't really make a lot of sense for a guy making $7 million to be playing so few minutes on your third line. So I think they're going to give Kerfoot a long look at that spot. He's fine on faceoffs. He's defensively responsible. He's not a big guy.
But you've lost your matchup then for that third line from a defensive standpoint. You know, with Trevor Moore on that side and Kerfoot in the middle, not necessarily a shutdown center by any means, you're going to be playing one of the top two lines essentially against the other team's best line, and then you've got Mikhaev in a defensive situation.
Yes. I think 100% that the top two, and I think that the minutes go up for the top two lines as well. I think you're going to see, just because you're not going to have the third line that you're going to want to play as much as you were comfortable playing Kadri. So, you know, they're going to be, the Leafs are going to be a little bit more top heavy. They're going to be breaking some guys in, like Trevor Moore's only played 25 regular season games in the NHL, and you know, it's going to be a question of how many minutes you want to give him. But, you know, and we're probably going to get to this next, but I think the fourth line is going to be capable of playing more minutes than what they had last year.
You've got Patan, Spezza, Shore, then Agostino in that mix. You know, so three guys make it under $1 million. But I want to get quickly to the defense. You're intriguing with your defense group because you've got Muzzin with Barry, who are, by the way, a pair at the World Championship in 2015 in Prague, and Mike Babcock watched them play every game there. Morgan Riley, Cody Ceci, Ben Harper, Justin Hall, and of course Travis Dermott on long-term IR. Why Muzzin and Barry together?
The debate with the Leafs D is, do you go Riley, Barry, and get your two best defensemen and your two puck movers playing together and kind of go all out, or do you look for some balance? And I think that balance makes the most sense, especially with, they're kind of trying to rehabilitate Cody Ceci a little bit. They think they can get more out of him than he showed in Ottawa by playing with a better partner than he had there and by playing less taxing minutes. So I think Cody Ceci doesn't get the tough matchups. You're going to want either one of Riley or Barry in that situation. And I think that if you just split it up and you give Ceci a really good partner against secondary competition, that's something that could work really well. But I would also expect that in-game situations, they're going to be mixing and matching those pairs, where if they need a goal, then it's Riley and Barry. And if they're ahead and they're trying to shut things down, then you got Muzzin out there with one of the right defensemen. And, you know, they've got some options here. And the blue line is going to be the thing that we're going to be talking about all year, with how different it is from what they had last year.
And why is Justin Hall an option now but wasn't last year?
I don't know what's going to happen with Justin Hall. I got to be honest with you. Like, I don't know what they intend to do with him. I mean, he's under contract. He didn't request a trade. So I don't know if they've told him you're going to get an opportunity or not. I mean, he only played 10 games last year. He was in the press box a lot. We saw him working out with the rolling mats and everything in the back of the arena a lot, because he just wasn't part of the team in a real sense. So either he gets an opportunity or they go with a more defensive-minded third pair. You know, I think when Dermott's out of the lineup, that third pair is not going to play that much, and they're going to really load the minutes on the top four. But, you know, maybe Marincin factors back in because they signed him again to a one-way deal. Maybe Borgman gets another look. I don't see them bringing the kids in yet in Sandin and Liljegren. I just don't think they're ready.
James, we'll keep an eye on this, and the lines are always written in pencil, bound to change. Thanks for talking to us.
Okay, thanks, guys.
That's James Myrtle, the editor-in-chief of The Athletic, TO, with his look in July at what the Leafs depth chart might look like.